Good afternoon. This is Carol Moyle, Committee Assistant, Environment and Energy Committee. Today is Friday, May 20th, 1:30 p.m., Hearing Room E. Agenda for today includes a work session on House Bill 2625 relating to cottage industries and House Bill 2241 relating to solid waste financial assurance.
Clerk, if you will please note those here. Those not here have been excused. We will open work session on House Bill 2241. You have in your file a letter from the Metropolitan Service District who operates St. John's Landfill. It is a letter in support of this bill. What this bill does, once again, is if you recall, they brought in a new bill. These have not gone to legislative council until they found out what the committee wanted to do on this bill. This provides a method for them to well, it's the one that's all
be mine if you want to look at it.
Everybody have it?
I don't think I have it.
You have it in your hand.
But I know, but this is Wally's.
This was a bill so that you can have, it's a financial assurance bill, so that when you are dealing with a landfill closure, that you have money available for monitoring and proper closure of that landfill. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Way back when we first had a hearing on this bill, we asked if possible, if it were possible to exempt out the wood products industry in regard to chips, sawdust, and all that. Now, I don't see that in here, but not sure. Maybe we better have Stan.
Stan, do you want to come up and so we can ask you about that and why that's in here and why that should or should not be exempt?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Stan Biles, representing Department of Environmental Quality. The draft that was just circulated is identical to the one that was circulated at the first hearing. Been no changes in it, and it would not allow at this point, we've not written into it, exemptions for any specific type of commercial or industrial activities. The feeling being that the problems that could be created from an inadequate closing of an industrial or a commercial landfill are just as serious and just as much of an environmental concern as the problems resulting from the inadequate closure of a municipal landfill. Therefore, I think it's the feeling of the department that we didn't see, at least in drafting the bill, the basis for an exemption of a certain type of industrial or commercial activity. So what was just distributed to you by the staff would be identical to what was distributed at the first hearing.
Madam Chair.
Representative Trahan.
Stan, would you expand on that? Why, what
kind of problems you're going to get into with a bunch of wood byproduct varieties.
Madam Chair, Representative Trahearn, the leachate that could come from a sawmill landfill or any type of a landfill that would relate to wood products industry can be of very significant, very potent environmental impact, either to surface water, abutting stream or lake, or to groundwater. And we have in our files documentation of an industrial landfill, I think it's related to wood products industry, where the leachate, if you will, coming from that landfill contaminated nearby drinking water, getting into the groundwater, much the same way as a municipal garbage dump could. The chemical composition of the leachate will certainly vary, but in terms of its environmental impact, no less significant.
Any further questions? Representative Trahearn and Representative Van Loan.
Dan, it seems like you told us last time that you had, I forgot my number, some 40 landfills or whatever that was, that have been closed since 1980. Do you remember those?
Representative Trahearn, there was a question-answer document that we've prepared in response to some of those questions, and I think we distributed it to each of the offices this week. It listed, and I don't know if you have it, it listed about 34 that have been closed since January 1 of 1980, another 5 on the last sheet that we'd anticipate closing between now and January 1 of 84.
I don't.
May I ask?
We've got extra copies.
Would you distribute those?
Is this it that just came today?
Yes.
HB 2241 fact sheet dated May 10th, 1983.
I can't get a receipt.
The last two pages indicate those landfills which have closed. On the first page, those landfills that have closed since January 1 of 1980, which would be addressed retroactively in terms of our ability to regulate post-closure. And the last page indicates 5 that we would anticipate closing between now and 1984, January 1, 1984.
The last time, any stand?
Yes, the last page.
No, but which do you anticipate closing?
The very last page.
The bottom. Turned over.
Oh.
On the back.
How many of these, Stan, are... Oh, I guess I can just look. Some of these, okay, this is really a mixed. Don Obrist is a. What kind of an outfit was that?
Ernie, what's Obrist? We have a mixture of private as well as
right.
Municipal.
I'm Ernie Schmidt, Administrator of the Solid Waste Division for DEQ. The Obrist landfill was a private, what we call a demolition type of fill. It was actually taking a variety of materials, but not garbage per se. It has both groundwater and methane gas problems that are going to have to be controlled on a continuing basis.
Oh, Representative Hill.
I'd like to ask the same question on number 31, the GP landfill in Springfield. Would that be an example of a landfill using wood waste? What kind of monitoring is necessary?
The number 31 that was listed, we're not indicating that there would be any post-closure requirements on that bill. Only the, it's our best estimate that only the seven that are indicated here are the ones that would be, that we would utilize this opportunity under this new legislation.
Andrew. Representative Trahan.
These seven are what you are considering them to be, something that the examples of why you need the legislation, is that what you're telling me?
Yes, Representative Trahan, these would be examples where they've already closed. Our ability to regulate post-closure is questionable at best. Been advised by the AG's office that we may not have that authority, and now we're looking retroactively at those, some of which we know have problems, the majority of which we don't believe at this time have problems.
Madam Chair.
Representative Trahan.
Would you then stand follow with, give us a little rundown on the problems of each of those seven, how much of that, those particular problems you think are going to be taken care of in the normal course of things without this bill? What I'm really trying to find out is how much it's going to do for you, I guess, whether it's needed, perhaps. If you could expand on this, I think it'd be nice.
Okay, Representative Trahan, I might let Ernie take the first whack at these seven, and then there were three on the back side, the last page, that we're anticipating problems with as well. Could give a brief rundown of the conditions, we know it.
What's the number?
Representative Trahan, now.
Briefly.
The Mickey site is located in rural Columbia County and has stability, landsliding, and erosion problems. In all these cases I'll describe, it would be a much more straightforward approach to have them on a continuing post-closure type of permit where the corrections are that need to be done not on a one-time basis, but on most of these situations there's continuous maintenance that is required. It's not a circumstance where we can just tell someone to correct a situation and expect it to stay that way without some continuing understanding with them as to the activities that they need to carry out. With that preface, I've mentioned Mickey's and Obrist.
Well, let's go back to Mickey's for just a second, if I could. Have they attempted to correct these erosion problems? Are you getting resistance from them?
I don't think that we have approached the, I'm not sure we even know who the current owner of that site is right now. Previously, the permittee was Mildred Mickey, but as we've gone back, and one of the things we've done recently is go back and look at some of these older sites to see how, so that we could report, you know, what, which sites and how many of them actually would be involved. And so we haven't made any regulatory approach to Mickey's again.
Okay, let's go ahead.
Representative Van Leeuwen, did you have a question?
Yes, I did, the way back here somewhere before okay. We got into this. I'd made a note on my bill about another bill that apparently relates to this or not, House Bill 2236, a fee bill. What was the relationship to this?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Leeuwen, the House Bill 2236 was enabling legislation to authorize the department to charge fees for the first time in our solid waste program to offset anticipated general fund reductions. And the fees anticipated in that bill or from that bill were what were plugged into the to our budget, both in the governor's proposal as well as what went to the legislature. So that's the
relationship to this is no relationship to this bill.
No, this would be somewhat separate. The only way that the only relationship is that the fees from that program would be going into the solid waste program to support a level of staff anticipated to be able to address all of the responsibilities of that program. But in no way are they specifically related or attached.
But it would have nothing to do to the funding or the deposits you were requiring on this.
Not at all.
Madam Chair.
Representative Prager and then Representative Parkinson.
Madam Chair, I had six other sites I would like to have a brief description of and what the problems are, whether they have contacted the owner and how cooperative they've been.
I think we're down to the third one.
Representative Trainer, and the next site was the Rocha Road site located in across the river from Corvallis. This again was a so-called demolition type of site. It we know it's affecting the groundwater table, and there needs to be continuing monitoring down there to keep track of how extensive that is. The operator is cooperative in this case and is aware of the potential problems there. However, it would be a typical circumstance that we would continue on a permit. The Whites, the next one, number four, Whites and Site, is the one that is near McMinnville that has recently been replaced. And again, there's monitoring. Let's see here. And the understanding that we have for continuing monitoring the schedule and maintenance of cover and this kind of thing would be in the permit that would continue on that site. Not everything that is mentioned. There are a variety of things that would in each of these sites that need to be taken care of that I'm not personally familiar with.
Well, the Whiteson site in Yamhill County, that's a county bill, is that not correct?
No, that's a private landfill.
That indicated Yamhill County was permittee.
That was operated by Ezra Cook, and you're certainly correct. It says Yamhill County, but that was operated as a private landfill. If I may go forward, the next site is the Old Hood River County landfill site that has serious leaching problems, and they have a variety of leachate control equipment up there, including a dam and pumping equipment and irrigation equipment that needs to be operated on a seasonal basis. They have an important job to do in keeping some drainage channels open so that the they don't hydraulically overload the irrigation system, and maintenance of cover and grading so that they can get good cover started on the site so they don't have erosion on a continuous basis.
Is the county following up on that?
We are going up there repeatedly to get an understanding between them and us as to what the what needs to be done. But again, we don't have the permit vehicle, which is the usual way that we regulate sources.
The relationship there has probably been less than what we would have desired, I guess, is a way of saying it.
On the next site, number six, I can't speak specifically to. I'm not familiar with it. The number seven, the Lavelle's site, is located in northeast Portland on 82nd in the vicinity of Rocky Butte. That's a demolition fill that was closed prematurely the right at the end of 1982. And in this site in particular, there's gas concerns. There's a history of gas coming up under private properties adjacent to the site, and there is gas control facilities that has to be operated to prevent that from reoccurring. It'll be a concern for many years to come. In this case, the permittee had developed a difference of opinion with the landowner as to the circumstances of the site, and there was a change in responsibility. And this site in particular is one that we've given as an example of why the post-closure authority is needed. It became very confusing and still isn't straightened out as to exactly how the how that site is going to physically be left. And there's a hole left out there that needs to be filled in order to give the proper grading to the site to prevent continuing problems. So the landowner has been attempting to get fill material off of the light rail project to accomplish that. But the biggest concern, of course, we have is that that the gas doesn't migrate back under private properties. We need to have a good understanding, again, on a permit that and do routine inspections.
You note under number 7 that monitoring wells, gas vending system, drainage system to be maintained. And you said that this work has been planned for. Would you tell me what planned for means? Has somebody agreed to do that, or what?
The H.G. Lavelle planned for it, but with the change in ownership, he had a lease with the property owner, and when that lease was broken, then it became unclear of the as to what the responsibilities of the new of the landowner would be, the person who then fell into control of the property. Particularly in these kind of circumstances, we're concerned about reasons why people would walk away from a disposal site. There were financial problems that developed, and it was very conceivable that the amount of capacity left in the site from which income could be drawn would be not enough to correct problems that would be developing.
Representative Parkinson and then Representative Anderson.
If Representative Anderson's question is on the same area, I'd defer.
Yes,
I want to change gears.
Representative Anderson.
It would have been helpful if we had known number 6, Weyerhaeuser in Lane County, what the problem was. Also, are the other 27 apparently satisfactory closures or?
Representative Anderson, I would prefer not to absolutely state that. These are the ones that, as we've gone through the file and recalled what the circumstances were that we've listed. Now, that doesn't mean that we might not have reoccurring problems at other sites.
I understand. I think the point I'd like to make is that 10 of the 34 here are wood products, yet we've only identified a problem with one of those, and we don't know what that is. I think I'm starting to make a case for the exemption of the wood products industry on putting up bonds and all this other type of thing, the landfill.
May I ask a question? Didn't you say last time that it took, and I don't know about wood product industries, but it took many times 5 to 10 years, or in a lot of cases at least 5 years, for some of the problems to occur or show up?
Yes, Madam Chairman, that in many cases 5 years isn't sufficient, and that's one reason we're a bit hesitant to sign off and say that the other X number here have a certified clean bill of health from DEQ, because a cursory review might show some obvious problems in some areas, but it may take 5, and in some cases it may take 10 years, and the East Coast and the Midwest, they're beginning to find out now that it may be longer than that before the real serious problems begin to surface, so to speak.
One other question. In the wood products industry, other than the leachate, what's the largest problem, or is that the biggest problem with wood products industry?
Madam Chair, the most classic example of a groundwater contamination from a solid waste disposal site happens to be wood waste. it was out here in the Turner area. And many of the industrial sites are wood disposal sites. As a matter of practice, there would be very few, as this list indicates, that would actually represent a problem. But the potential is there, and therefore we did not propose to opt them out.
Representative Parkinson and then Representative Hill.
Yeah, Stan, would it be correct to say that there normally are three kind of landfills? And I'll just list them, then you can tell me if I'm wrong. There'd be private, single source, like a lumber mill, or they would be the only ones using it. There would be a government, like a county or metro, and then there would be private, where the public uses it. Are there other kinds? Or would that pretty much cover them? Okay.
Yes.
But then anyway, I'm wondering if there's problems here mixing those different kinds, and I'm talking about the financial assurance. And maybe we covered this last hearing, but if we did, I've kind of forgotten. The financial assurance, would you tell me the forms it can take, just really briefly, but say that for the three types, the government, the private, and the private-public.
Representative Parkinson, what we're suggesting in the legislation is considerable flexibility on that matter, to allow the local operator to propose to us how best he or she or they could satisfy the financial requirements. So it'd be left up to each operator to devise what is available to them. Do they have sufficient cash flow? Do they have access to insurance? Do they have access to financial institute? However best for them that they can provide the assurance to us. Some of the various methods that have been discussed would range from setting aside a certain amount of cash for those that are still operating, those that are still charging and have a revenue method, to set aside a small portion, and I think the Metro written testimony addresses a 33 cents or so, set aside that over a period of time in a secured account that could be tapped for the closure and then the post-closure maintenance and whatnot. One method of doing it. Bonds and insurance has been discussed. Escrow accounts. I guess we're very flexible on that. Whatever the local operator feels most comfortable with, it satisfies that need.
Okay. Now, say like a big lumber mill, their balance sheet and their agreement with you probably would be sufficient. Is that a true statement? Say a Georgia Pacific or Weyerhaeuser or something that's got a multi-million dollars in assets and they've got a potential liability of $10,000, probably their agreement would be enough?
Representative Parkinson, it's difficult not knowing a specific example, but we've talked about either a large entity and looking at the assets that company has available, and I guess the same could be applied to a municipality where you know they're going to be in existence. You know, regardless of what goes wrong, you're going to have a city that you can go back and talk to, that your requirements there probably would be considerably different than a small operation that may be there for a relatively short period of time. But I think without knowing the specifics, that your large facility like that, a fairly broad agreement probably would serve the purpose that we have in mind.
Okay, Madam Chairman, then we'll get down to the smaller private public, maybe. This will all be done by rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to treat them all the same, so it'll be done by rule. And I guess my question, is it conceivable that you would have an operator that would, in his rated, have built in all overhead, and then he would have built in a reasonable profit, and then he would have built in a fee for post-closure?
Yes, Representative Parkinson.
The ratepayer would be paying all these fees, of course, one way or another. What if, say, a $25,000 fund was accumulated for post-closure and never needed it? That is my question. It took a while. I'm like Priestley, but what happens to the money?
Well, Representative Parkinson, we tried to, in a written way, address that. I guess it was question 9 in our sheet.
It is.
Our intent would be that those funds, if you made an estimate, we're working cooperatively with the landfill operator. We say it's going to take $10,000 to close it out. We make that estimate 5 years in advance. 5 years comes, we close it out to our satisfaction, but it costs $5,000. So you have a $5,000 surplus.
Getting into the wrong file.
I think our position would be that that money, whatever surplus it is, should make its way back to the public.
How?
But Mike, depending on the situation in the given area, you might have different alternatives, but some of the items that we've discussed would be making the funds available to the local government. They've got a franchise system somehow offsetting future rate increases by whatever cash is left over. The potential for transferring the surplus money to the new facility in the community, if there is one, that again would require some type of post-closure fund. But if there's a surplus left over from one, trying to make that.
In the case of a commercial account with drop boxes, the ratio is a little bit different. It's about 60-30. It's about 30 disposal is about 30% of the cost. The primary cost of garbage to the consumer comes from the collection area, and those are Roger's costs of drivers, labor, gasoline, trucks, maintenance, etc. Those are the primary costs. The example that we gave you, I think that's in our testimony, just to make it concrete, is that the base disposal cost at the St. John's landfill currently is $10.33 a ton. That is the amount that the garbage hauler would pay to dispose of garbage at the landfill. It doesn't include some other charges that are there, but that's the cost of disposing of the garbage. We budget out of that $10.33 a ton, 33 cents goes to our sinking fund to pay for closure and post-closure maintenance, leachate control, and methane gas control at that landfill. And that is probably, if not the one of the largest, probably the largest landfill in the state of Oregon, I would assume. You're talking about well over 800,000 tons of garbage a year going in there.
So if you're doing 33 cents a ton, you're talking actually going back to the can per month or per week.
The cost becomes minuscule. I mean, taking 12% of that, excuse me, relatively minuscule when you carry that back.
Well, how much do you figure for closure of the, how much are you planning for closure? 200,000? How much?
I'm sorry, I don't have my briefcase with me. I can get that for you. It would be somewhere between 700 and 800,000 tons a year times 33 cents would give you, over a period of time, over 5 years, would give you a figure. But then, translating that back to the per can cost, you're talking about...
Well, and then how many customers do you have, and you do it back
right
to the can cost. I mean, I cannot imagine that it would be...
How many cans make a ton?
Huh? A penny a can?
It's even less than that.
It's less than
I'm sorry.
Less than a penny a can.
You people are talking about a huge disposal site, and of course with many, many customers, and that may be, there may be a difference, but I think all of the landfill sites are getting larger and the transportation to them is a much greater distance.
Well, I think in the case of land, St. John's, I mean, that comes from how many miles away? That's some fairly significant transportation costs as well.
Madam Chairman, again, you need to separate collection costs from disposal costs.
Okay.
And when you're talking about the cost to the consumer, the transportation is all, those costs are all collection. So they would not be, you're not talking about that here.
But what you're talking about for the financial assurance whether it's small or large, you're really not talking, when you're talking about insignificant, you really are talking about per can. I think it's
less than a penny.
Representative Van Loon.
One more question, and that's with number six on Stan's sheet he gave us. Does anybody have any problem with reaching backwards to 1980?
Madam Chair, Representative Van Loon, I suppose my standpoint, we don't have any problem with it.
I know you don't, but
I suppose
there's a couple people right there.
Does anybody else have any problem with reaching back to 1980 as far as those sites are concerned? I see one hand raised from the committee, two hands, but I don't know if that's what the second one was about.
Do you have a problem with that, Mr. Donica? You have a problem with that, Mr. Roger?
I
need you up here if you say anything. And then we'll get back to Jeanette.
Okay.
After she's read the bill.
Roger Emmons again, briefly. Although I do not represent the specific sites that are involved that have been listed as having some significant problems, the one area that I was a bit concerned with, and I have worked on this and worked with an industry committee of my industry and with DEQ for some time on the bill, is going back on existing sites. I know they have a problem with two big ones. I'm not sure how they could handle it in any other way. I do like to see, wherever possible, that the players have a scorecard and have the law and the rules and regulations out front so they know what they have to do and how much it's going to cost. One other brief comment, if I might be permitted. Well, there are other costs in the whole collection disposal system that certainly exceed the cost for closure and otherwise. It's much like a certain tax that will go unnamed so we don't have an afternoon's discussion on it, that starts very small, but it is an added cost.
Mr. Donica.
Tom Donica for Associated Oregon Industries. Several of my members have contacted me with regard to this bill, and they have some problems with it. But let me start off with a couple of items. If you look at the list of landfills, and I have not talked to Mr. Schmidt or anybody about it, but a number of those, to my own knowledge, were in existence prior to 1971 when this legislature created the authority for a permit system to allow the DEQ to review, determine whether the site had for site adequacy, and all of the necessary procedures for operation. They inherited a lot of these, and they were not the creation of this legislature, and it's going to be difficult, I think, to go back on a number of them. Secondly, at least for industrial firms, we do not have anybody else to look to collect the money for us. We've got to put the money up front right now. And I would make the further distinction that as between our large members and our small members, the problems of financial responsibility, however the bill means what it says, and I'm sure that it does, our larger members will probably not have great difficulty meeting the financial assurance requirements, either through a letter of some assurance because they have adequate resources. They've been in business in this state for a long time and will be here for a long time. However, we have our smaller members who are having difficulty. We have just advised them that this House Bill 2236, which will cause permit fees to be charged them, has passed both houses and undoubtedly will be signed by the governor. One of the major costs of that permit fee is compliance assurance. And they're saying, we've got a permit. It says what we're supposed to do. It says we're supposed to close on time. They're not going to charge us a permit fee. They're going to tell us, they're going to come out and see us. Do they really need more now from us? And that's really the question they're asking. And then one point, which is kind of interesting, was pointed out, you will give DEQ 5 years advance notice of closure. They said, for virtually everybody in the timber products industry that has gone bankrupt in the last 3 years, none of them 1978 or 79, but they would be in this kind of shape today. The industry is sick, and hopefully it's coming out of it. But they are getting a little bit jumpy about more fees. They did not resist the permit fee. They understood it. They understood, by the time we got through talking to them, the problems that the Solid Waste Division was having in financing its program. But they are having some difficulty with this portion of it. We would offer an alternate suggestion, and that is, at this point in time, since there does appear to be a need, and I personally know that there's a need for something to be done in this area, that you confine the bill currently to closure after the effective date of this act, and two, confine it to major landfills that have basically served, you can pick the number, whether it's 25,000 or 50,000, but you're really talking regional landfills like Rossman, like Lane County or Eugene, like St. John's, like Browns Island. You've got, those are ones which are going to be closed where there may be problems where the population is going to have to pick up that cost one way or another, and now would probably be a good time to start thinking about it, and where the costs are likely to be significant. If you can get that concept in place, then we can look at where we are in 1985. And if that sounds, if that please sounds unfamiliar for me, I excuse myself.
Representative Bradbury.
I'm just thinking about, maybe this is, comes under a different section of the law, but I'm thinking about some of the things that have gone on the East Coast. If I remember correctly, Love Canal was a private company landfill. It was not a landfill that served any number of people besides one company. And I don't think that, I mean, I don't know whether that comes under some other section of the law or not, but it was a landfill that is a disaster. And it just so happens that it served one company. So I'm not sure that the dangers are limited to landfills that serve 25,000 to 50,000 people.
No. I can't give you 100% assurance that there are not problems. And Mr. Schmidt, I'm sure, can give you examples that... there may be some problems in the size landfills I'm talking about. I would, however, at least hearten you in this sense. The hazardous waste portion of this issue is pretty well under control. We did create, if you remember, that the state of Oregon does have title to the only hazardous waste disposal site in the state of Oregon, and with the exception of two sites, only two sites met the criteria for EPA, and they're both closed. That would suggest that we have a hazardous waste disposal site problem of the Love Canal type in the state, and I would also add a hearty thank God to that. We don't need it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
Question to Stan, but Love Canal shouldn't happen in Oregon under present law, should it?
Representative Parkinson, we've got a system we think that that not only covers the disposal but predates disposal to the transportation of a hazardous waste, and that's the real key. Not only do you know where it's generated, you know where it's going to, when it's left, when it's got there, and where it's been disposed. That's not to say that people could escape that system, but we feel comfortable with it.
It is improbable. Well, anything can happen, Mr. Representative Parkinson. One of the things that management is having difficulty with in the hazardous waste program, I don't want to divert you from the bill before you, is that once you have generated it, you can never get rid of the responsibility unless you take great care that the transportation is correct and that it is put in a disposal site that is as secure as you can find. You have, and your corporation or your company have, responsibility for it forever. And that is the concept of the Resource Conservation Recovery Act hazardous waste sections. And management, it's a concept that I know many of the people in management that I deal with are just having a hard time understanding. It's forever. And a lot of this stuff is forever.
Representative Hooley, in...
Yes.
One of the questions, and let's stick just to municipal waste garbage sites for a moment. One of the questions is, what do you do with the smaller sites, and are they going to have to pay enormous costs? On page 3, there are some criteria that talk about the amount and type of material disposed in the site, and perhaps the requirements would be substantially different for a small site that served a city of 5,000 population and a new one for Metro that might serve 1 million or 1.4 million. The buffers from adjacent land and drinking water, some of the costs, the future use of the property. And please, if we ever have a Love Canal-type disposal site for hazardous waste here, I hope nobody's going to go digging down through the top and through the clay layers and into the material. That's just not very good future use of property. The duration in use, the and G, we think is extremely important, and it's one of the reasons we like the flexible approaches to financial assurance. The degree to which the site will be completed prior to closure on a close-as-you-go basis. We may have some portions of the disposal site that will have been closed for 30 years as we get these new, longer-term, larger regional sites. And I think there's plenty of flexibility in there to include at least all of the types of municipal waste sites. I don't want to try to speak for the either for or against industrials. Also, Stan and I were just talking very briefly. It depends on what you're going to do if you do go back on sites created after 1980. And perhaps Stan would like to discuss whether you're going back and making major new costs, major new systems, or whether you're monitoring and controlling from here on out.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the conversation Roger and I was having related to these 34 sites that have already closed, how difficult, if not impossible, it is to go back on those 34 and request some type of financial assurance. As the simple fact of the matter is, it's already closed. There's no income coming into the property. Very difficult to provide some new source of assurance. Our major interest there, I think, would be that there's an ongoing obligation, regardless of who currently owns the property, regardless of who used to own it in the past or who used to operate it, an ongoing responsibility to maintain the methane systems, to maintain the leachate control systems, to maintain the wells that are monitoring groundwater and potential contamination. That just doesn't go by the wayside due to our inability to regulate a landfill once it's closed, but some type of ongoing obligation to do that rather than the provision of retroactive financial assurance. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. Representative Trahan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following Stan's comment, which I think is important, and I think we all recognize the need for this kind of legislation, perhaps, but still, some of us have some real concerns with the financial requirements that in building these huge reserve funds and those kinds of things. And Stan, looking at those past sites and some of the ones that you see being closed, and I recognize that once a piece of land has been used for landfill, it doesn't have perhaps all the value that it might otherwise, but what would happen if we just put that responsibility that you spoke of a moment ago clearly on the landowner, whomever that may be, to give you the kind of teeth to be able to be sure that some of those things are happening, perhaps whatever, get in something I don't like to get into, lien rights or whatever, to be sure that those things are happening as far as the land is concerned without building these large dollar reserves that may or may not be necessary. Have you thought about that concept?
Representative Trahan, that's something that has been discussed. I'm not inherent in the bill is an attempt to the agreement with DEQ. If we could find and if we could lock into an agreement with the previous permittee, that's the first place we'd like to go, because that's the company or individual that operated the facility. If we can't do that, if they've left town, left the state, gone bankrupt, worst case, then through the bill, our next point of attention would be on the current property owner. So that is a concept that's already contained in the bill, although our intent would be to go to the person who had the permit rather than the property owner. Lacking that, we had no choice. I think that the way we viewed it is that what we're requiring is nothing new. For a properly operated landfill, they should already be setting aside funds or at least in their own mind have some financial ability to properly close off a landfill. We see that as just an inherent obligation on the landfill operator and most of them, we think, are doing that. So this bill really gets at those instances, the recent past as well as in the future, where you have, for some unforeseen circumstance, that's not being done. And we felt that the key to do that would be to put the incentive on the operator in advance of closure, to provide not only an incentive, but it provides the best assurance that we could see, at least realistic assurance, that the funds would be there.
Representative Strayer.
Stan, I guess I see a difference in setting aside funds to close the landfill and being allowed to use those same funds as operating capital to keep the business going, to make the payroll and some of those things, as long as the operator sees at the end of the operation is going to have the responsibility to do what we're all suggesting. And when you start taking money out of any business and say, gee whiz, let's tuck this over in this little reserve fund over here someplace, and you can't really use it, we haven't even addressed the issue whether you get the interest off of it yet or not, that's a heck of a lot more expensive than allowing him to, during his operation, than allowing him to have some use of it. The problem, obviously, is that you're not assured that at the end of that period of time that he's going to have left, I guess, is the concern. What I'm trying to get away from is building this chunk of money over here that nobody can touch until the closure, and trying to find another way to allow them to have the money to operate with, but still have some responsibility in the thing when they get to the closure, and that's what I'm looking for.
We need to wind this up. I have, Jeanette, do you want to answer that question the way the bill is currently written that we ask you to ask?
Fine with me, Jeanette.
Madam Chair, I don't believe the authority that's given to the Commission in the bill drafted here would be sufficient to allow them to dispose of the excess money. I think if you're going to give that to them, they need specific authority to do so, and perhaps a little bit of guideline as to what they can use it for.
Let me just try to get some consensus from the committee on four or five items that hopefully, well, we can take the legislative council, can be distributed to all members, that will be a complete bill that they can look at, and if there's any section they're worried about, please let us know. But these are some of the items that the committee has brought up that I think need to be addressed. Specific authority and on the disposal of that any excess money, whether that go back, how that's redistributed either via the collection fee or the local government, if it's a private company, whether they're the only user of that, or would automatically go back to that company. That's one item. Two, that the money is not used for any other purpose. Three, I guess really the same thing, how do you return that money? The interest should apply to the fund, that once that money that has been said to have been needed for the closure of the landfill, if that's $40,000, once they reach that amount, they cannot collect anymore. And I think probably the last item is that it should not be retroactive. And can we have those kind of amendments brought back to us?
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
There's one other thing I'm not too comfortable with, and that is the same legislation covering municipal corporations and private. I am just not too convinced that DEQ should be telling the Marion County or something exactly how much they have to have in the reserve fund. Maybe I'm wrong.
But I think they have to, don't they have to monitor it, make sure that...
I think that Marion County, with their agreement, whoever has a dump, is going to know that they're responsible. It just looks to me like tax entities, people that have the ability to tax and everything, that they should be treated different. I don't know what it's worth.
Madam Chair.
I just tried to bring up what I saw. Representative Anderson.
I'd like to ask some language on... including only those landfills that are served by
a population figure, whatever that is. 25,000 was thrown out. And also stubbornly holding to an option of opting out to wood products in industry only for wood products. And I don't mean the glues and all those other things, but I mean the sawdust, the chips, etc.
We are going to take a 5-minute recess.
One more thing. I think any amendments that come in ought to go through Legislative Council.
Yes, they must go through. Yes,
these
they must.
Did they?
No. Okay. They must go through Legislative Council. If there's some disagreement, you might get together with some people, but we would like to have these a week from Wednesday. We're going to take a 5-minute recess. Let's be back on time. We have one other work session today that we need to vote on, and that's cottage industry. Back to order. We will open work session on House Bill 2625, dealing with cottage industries.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
I'd move the amendments to the bill HB 2625-2, dated May 19th. S3.
Representative Parkinson, some of us need those amendments. Thank you.
I have to make one clarification.
And Ms. Sampson needs to make one clarification.
The amendments that you are getting before you now, they're in your hand-engrossed bill, which you have copies of in your file, and they are a combination of two sets of amendments that went to Legislative Council, so it would be better if you did not refer to them, but refer to the engrossed bill.
As corrected, delete all that and say engrossed bill amendments.
Okay.
Isn't this and this, Beth? This and this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're two different. This is 2625-1, and that's okay. One portion of 2625-1 and 1.
I'll just add to it then, Madam Chair, and then I would, the same amendment would cover Legislative Council amendments to House Bill 2625-1, dated 5-19-83, S2 through line 4. And lines 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 would not be in my motion.
Line what?
5, 6, 7, 8, 9 would not be in my motion.
Okay. Would that also cover on the engrossed bill before you, lines 12 through 14, Representative Parkinson?
Deletion.
The deletion there?
I think we'll take up the
Madam Chair, we haven't discussed this yet. I withdraw the whole thing.
Madam Chair.
Let me. Okay, Beth, do you want to explain it, and we'll just quickly go over this.
That was a Friday afternoon.
It was a good try.
That was a good try. Thank you. I appreciate it.
If you look at your hand-engrossed bill, which you all have copies of, the first amendment that was suggested is in line 5. As you'll recall, I think Representative Parkinson and Representative Bradbury brought up that this looked like a mandate requiring local governments to allow home occupations in any zone. The language has been altered, so it is simply enabling legislation. A governing body may allow home occupations in its zone. If you will go down to line 8, I believe Representative Anderson was working with LCDC to come up with some language that would have no problems as far as they're concerned with it. And they indicated a concern about huge numbers of employees, and they were comfortable with the employees no more than 5 persons who are not related. There was some, on lines 12 through 14, it was felt there would be some concern, rather than addressing the testimony that we heard here, that buildings would be specifically constructed in order to start these industries in EFU zones, and that perhaps that was going a bit further than was necessary to address the problems. Representative Van Leeuwen also called me and asked for an amendment, I think with this in mind, to keep things in line with the character of the neighborhood. By deleting lines 12 through 14, it should take care of that concern. Those are the only amendments that have been offered. And the first two, the one on line 5 and the one on line 8, are taken care of in this little sheet of LC amendments before you. The deletion is not on those two sheets. If you wished to move all three of them at once, you should move the hand engrossed copy of the bill.
Madam Chair, a question to Beth. Mm-hmm. Beth, line 11 there, would that allow, say, a cottage industry that needs to build another small auxiliary building that looks like the house or the barn or whatever, would that be permitted then?
Dick Matthews is here, and I think that is governed by other provisions, but I think he might be able to answer that for you.
Representative Parkinson, when Representative Anderson and I and Beth discussed this morning, we wanted to be enabling legislation and sort of leave that question moot almost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dick Matthews, Department of Land Conservation and Development. I'm not sure as to exactly what the question is.
Well, Representative Parkinson's question on line 11, where it says other buildings normally associated with uses permitted in the zone in which the property is located. For example, say you had some, as the one woman brought up in testimony, they have started on their farm, you know, within the existing building, some kind of a manufacturing beef jerky. And I suppose if you needed to build a little smokehouse for it or something, if that would be allowed under this bill. I think, at least my understanding of the committee, what we were trying to do is make sure that there was an enabling legislation so that the city or county, or the county could not be afraid of allowing a home occupation, but they would really set up the rules. And the only rule we have in here is that they should not allow more than 5 employees.
Within existing structures.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's also limited under 215.203, where it talks about the agricultural zoning and the uses allowed within that. It refers it only to dwellings related to farming activities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Parkinson.
I'm not supposed to ask all these questions because it's Friday, but this kind of looks to me like the way the language is, that if they needed something else, they'd have to build a barn and then convert it to a storage room or something. But I don't know really what was wrong with the C, but maybe I'm wrong.
Representative Hill.
I think they could build B, in my mind, would allow a building that looks like a barn. That's how I would interpret it if I sat on the Planning Commission.